When it comes to children, and they're developing their character, they're developing their sense of self, their sense of mind. So when they are little guys, they might explore all five, and then as they grow, they might prefer or be inclined more to one of those. And it has to do with personality, and it has to do with the way they were raised. For example, I grew up in a loving home, but in my loving home, it was my brother and I, and my brother has special needs. So I was always the one that could do her things on her own. So because I always was able to do things on my own, now as an adult, I like when people do things for me, right? Because
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
If you want to ask your own questions and join the conversation, you can sign up through my Patreon. You can also get access to one-on-one coaching with me. Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to people who can help you on your parenting journey. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with also one of my favorite parenting accounts. It is High Impact Club. She's probably one of the first, I don't know if she even knows this, but she's probably one of the first parenting accounts that I actually followed on TikTok. So I've been following her for a while, probably longer than she's been following me. And so I'm super excited to have this conversation. I've actually wanted to talk to her for a while, so we'll see how this conversation goes. We're going to be talking about love languages. We're going to talk about her parenting philosophy, her journey. We already have a question on the side from one of my community members. And so it's going to be a really good, fun conversation. I'm excited to see where it goes. But first, why don't you introduce yourself, Marcella?
Hello, Mr. Charles. Thank you so much for having me in your podcast today. I was looking forward because, yes, I've been following you for a while. Don't think that it's been a while that I've been following you. And I just love your parenting philosophy. You're very aligned to with everything I teach in my account as well. So my name is Marcella Collier. I'm a parenting with understanding coach. That's how I call it. I help parents of children respond to their children's behaviors according to their children's needs, because every behavior communicates a need.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think I can't, you know, emphasize that enough. But let me ask you one of, and I don't know if this is one of your more popular, but something that I see come up on my page, a lot of your videos, and I just loved hearing you talk about it, were the love languages and the different love languages that your child may have and how to communicate and really and even interpret their behavior.
Yes.
And I want to just start off super open question. Tell us about, you know, the love languages and what does it have to do with children? Because I think most of us heard about the love languages in the context of a partner or a spouse, you know, and but now I hear other people talking about it more, but I think I've heard you talk about it the most personally in terms of like in the Instagram, TikTok account world. So tell us a little bit about like, what is it? Tell me about the love languages. What does it all mean?
Okay, so a love language is, the love languages are the ways that we as humans like to give love and receive love. And love languages are not a human thing, right? So children are human, so they have a love language, a way that they like to receive love and give love, right? Dr. Gary Chapman, the creator of the five love languages, he says that we have five love languages or five ways that we like to receive or give love. But out of those five, we always have one that is our primary one. It is not that we hate the other ones, it is that we prefer to receive and give connection and love with one of them. So the five love languages are gifts, words of affirmation, quality time, physical touch, and what didn't I say?
Acts of service?
And acts of service, right. So depending on what our love language is, we give it, like we that's the way that we express love and we receive love. Now, children have love languages as well. When it comes to children, and they're developing their character, they're developing their sense of self, their sense of mind. So when they are little guys, they might explore all five. And then as they grow, they might prefer or be inclined more to one of those. And it has to do with personality, and it has to do with the way they were raised. For example, I grew up in a loving home, but in my loving home, I was it was my brother and my brother has special needs. So I was always the one that could do her things on her own. So because I always was able to do things on my own, now as an adult, I like when people do things for me, right? Because I was always left to do things for my on my own. Like, I need to help your brother, you can tie your shoes. I need to help your brother, you can brush your teeth on your own. So, like, my mother was very caring and loving, but she always was helping my brother more than me, obviously, because of the special situation. So the way that we grow up, our upbringing could shape the way that we like to give and receive love. Now, there is something about children and love languages, and it is that they are they don't always understand how to give it or how to ask for it in a pro-social way, right? Every behavior is the communication of a need. Humans have five basic needs, and one of those five basic needs is the need for belonging, love, and connection. And if we don't have the verbal skills, or if we don't have the feeling literacy or the emotional intelligence to have the insight to know what we feel and how to communicate it successfully, we communicate it through behavior. And that's usually the case for children, right? Because they don't have the social skills that developed. So for example, if I have in my love language is quality time, I could tell my husband, let's hang out. I want to hang out with you. But one of my sons, his love language is quality time. He might not tell me that, but he might interrupt my conversation with my husband. He might maybe try to interfere my work. He's just asking for the same love language, quality time, but in the only way that he can, which is through behavior.
Yeah, because that's the way, you know, your child isn't necessarily doesn't have the skills, especially when they're, you know, maybe overwhelmed in emotion, to say, excuse me, mother, I know you're really busy right now, but could you schedule some time in your day to play Legos with me? Only need about, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. So at your convenience, please, you know, schedule it through my booked-in app. So, you know, like children aren't going to articulate it that way, but they do feel these strong feelings. And with behavior, that is how, you know, it is something internally happening within them that they're most times not aware of. And that's just their natural reaction. And maybe it's through learned through the past. Like I knew when I stood on the table yesterday, mom came right there for me, or the teacher, whoever it was, came right there. So it's like, I know like the cause and effect, but they don't necessarily know how to solve that problem or ask for their love language need to be met.
Exactly. And the thing is that I always teach my followers, my students inside my programs, that we are need detectors. We as parents are need detectors. Need detectors meaning that we have to look beyond the behavior and unveil what our children really are trying to communicate to us and the need that they're trying to meet through their behavior. For example, In our natural eye, we may see that child is being disruptive, that he's being annoying, that he's not listening when I tell him mom is working right now, right? In our natural eye. But if we put our need detector glasses on, we will see that he's really trying to communicate his need of me speaking his love language, but he doesn't know how.
I love that. I love the term need detectors, because now that's what it really is. And just looking at it, and I kind of frame it as like, okay, we have to put our investigative hat, like let's investigate, let's figure out exactly what that thing that it's that underlying need is. And you know, they will leave clues a lot of times. And sometimes we're so busy, right? Because as adults, it's not just children that we have to focus on. We have to focus, maybe we have to keep to a schedule, maybe we have a job, maybe we're worried about food, maybe we're worried about, you know, all these other things that are happening that take our attention away from what that underlying need is. And that doesn't mean, that's not like, you know, it doesn't mean you're a bad parent or teacher or whatever. It's just us being self-aware of just sometimes taking a moment, taking a step back, maybe breathing. Am I emotions? Have I met my needs? Is this a response? And really kind of looking at this situation from a broader perspective, or maybe with your need detective. Like, okay, so what is this need? Like, it's really frustrating that he's jumping on the couch, but like, Is it a need for physical activity? Is it a need for, you know, like love? Like, is he trying to get my attention? You know, what is it? And then maybe there are other things that happen that are happening in their environment, that happened maybe even yesterday, where you can kind of identify, help you figure out what that need is. Now, I have a question that one of my community members asked in the very beginning, and it's a little bit, so her question is, and her son is 5, she asks, my son's love language is quality time. How do I gently suggest spending quality time with my son without sounding like nagging? And this is-
That he's nagging? I don't understand that she's nagging?
Yeah, I think she's feeling that, she wants, I think maybe it's, she wants quality time, and correct me. It sounds like you're wanting quality time with your son so that you can build maybe a stronger relationship, or, you know, kind of build your bond. And maybe he's into Minecraft. Oh, it says, you said husband needs quality time.
The child or the husband?
Yeah.
Okay, so is she asking how can I have a date with my husband without feeling guilty that I'm leaving my son? Because as mothers, that's what we feel. I'm a mother, and that's what we feel. Like, if I take a time for myself or for myself and my husband, then I feel as if I'm a bad mom, because I should be with the kids. I should be playing with them instead. I should be with them. No. No, it is not a selfish act. It is a selfless act. And this is why the shape that you are in determines the quality of care that you give to your child. So if you're not in a good shape in your relationship with your husband, if you are not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be in a good shape to really be that need detector when your child needs you. If you're drained, you cannot pour out from an empty cup.
Yes, 100%. You can only give what you have, and you know, your needs have to be met too. And I talk all the time, it's about matching the needs of the adult and the needs of the children, right? And oh wow, this is actually a really good conversation to have with the shirt I'm wearing. Those out in the world in podcasting land, Spotify, Apple, you guys can't see it, but
I love that shirt.
It's a new shirt I ordered, and you guys can buy it too if you like, but it's called It's Okay to Baby, or it says It's Okay to Baby a Baby. And I think that really fits into this conversation, is that, you know, so your baby has needs too, but you have needs as the parent as well. And so, yeah, you're not going to spoil, the reason I like made this shirt is so that you're not going to spoil your baby from holding your baby too much, right? But at the same time, then people ask, like, okay, but like sometimes I need time to myself. Like, I need a break too. And that's important too. You know, it's you being aware of what your needs are, what you need in the moment, and aware of what your child's needs are and what they need in the moment, and seeing what you can do to kind of mesh those things. So yeah, I'm sure you can hold, you know, the baby for, you know, 5-10 minutes, but is there anyone that you have for support? Is there anything that your baby maybe is really interested in doing? Maybe it's some sensory play that they can engage in. So they're so immersed in sensory play and they're not really, you know, crying for the, you know, to be held or and things like that. It's about meshing your needs as the adult, as the caregiver, and the needs of the child. And a lot of times, and you tell me what you think about this, Marcella, is a lot of times I recognize that, you know, in conversations I have with parents and also with teachers too, sometimes we're not aware of what we need to happen in the situation, of what our needs are too. Mm. And sometimes that's a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And let me clarify a little bit exactly, you know, what I mean in that. So like maybe it's, so the example of the child jumping on the couch, right? Sometimes we think we need the child to sit down, mm-hmm. right? But we really just need the child to be safe. And those are two different things, right? And sometimes when we think our need is for the child to sit down, that limits, you know, the options available, right? That if we think our need is for the child to sit down and to just be calm and you know, maybe play on an iPad or just play with toys, then that limits the option now. Can't go outside, can't go to the playroom, can't, you know, have a dance party, can't, you know, and maybe it's in a different space in the room, mm-hmm. right? And that takes a lot of conversation. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's because, okay, you don't know what you don't know. If you don't know what your child's 5 basic needs are and how they present through behavior, then every time you see a behavior, that's all you see, right? Because mm-hmm. you are not trained. You don't have the skill to look beyond the behavior and unveil the need. That's all I teach inside the Parenting with Understanding program. I equip parents with the skill of knowing exactly what the need is so they have that awareness, right? Yeah. Because it is not that they don't want, parents don't want to have the awareness. It is that they don't know what they don't know, right?
Yeah.
And if they don't know what those needs are and how they present in children, they would not be able to recognize it when they see a certain kind of behavior in a child, right? So it is like, for example, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse. I see blood, for me it's blood. It's like, oh my God, this is blood. But for them, they know what the problem is and they know what the source is and how to fix it, right? Yeah. So it is the same thing when we have that training, that skill. That's why it is very important for the parents that are listening to us that, yes, being a kind parent is important, but it's just half of the job. The other half of the job is to get your parenting education. Mm-hmm. Get your parenting education, whether it is with Mr. Chaz or whether it is with me or any other professional in parenting, to get your parenting education. I just compare, like, for example, when we want to make life-changing decisions. I bought a house. What did I do? I went to my real estate agent to be guided through the process, right? When I started my business, what did I do? I went to a lawyer to get guided through the process. Having a child cannot be more life-changing. It is more life-changing than other those two. So how come for that we get guidance, but not for parenting, right?
Yeah.
So
that is, I love it. I love it. And I actually, that's a pretty good segue. And now we're going to get, you know, back to your question, but that's a pretty good segue into, you know, your journey. And I was watching one of your YouTube videos. She's on YouTube too, by the way, y'all.
Same username everywhere, High Impact Club.
Yes, plug that in there. So And you were talking a little bit about, or I think maybe you mentioned it a little bit, of how kind of when you started, you didn't really know kind of what to do, and you there was something that made you decide to like change, or can you tell me a little bit about like what that was? Like what made you decide to get your parenting education and
Okay,
like what was that
so
moment?
I think no, like this is going to be news for you, news for everybody, because I haven't said this in social media. But my background, I went to school to be a lawyer. I'm a lawyer, and that's my background. I knew law, and then I got married, and the years passed and passed, and we couldn't get pregnant. So my husband and I decided to start doing foster care to bless children while we waited for to get pregnant. Anyway, the child that came to our care, he had a lot of behavioral needs, a lot of behavioral needs. And then I felt at a loss because I wanted to be a gentle parent. Like I was never into I'm going into punishment or like using punitive type of discipline. I was always in the gentle parenting side, but because I didn't have the skills, I didn't know how to help him with his behavioral needs, with his tantrums, with his meltdowns, with his aggression. So I was at a loss. And because his behavioral needs were so high, the team, his team was going to take him out of my care to put him in a treatment home. And I was like, I refuse for them to disrupt this child. If he leaves the house, it's because he's transitioning to his forever home, not because he's being disrupted to this place. That so that's when I decided to start my therapeutic training. So they trained me in therapeutic foster care. They trained me in trauma-informed care. And I started caring for this child. And he went from having tantrums every single day to communicating his needs successfully. And I was
I love
amazed
it.
at
I love it.
his, I was amazed, right? Right now, he's almost an adult. It was many years ago. Besides him, after him, I started doing therapeutic foster care. So all the children that came to my care had high behavioral needs. I'm not saying high behavioral needs, meaning not the developmentally expected kind of behaviors. Concern like challenging behaviors that were a danger to self and others, behaviors that were not age appropriate, those kind of behaviors disruptive to their routine and their normal lives. So I had children in my care that were 8 years old and they were not potty trained, for example, those kind of behaviors. Or children that were suicidal, those kind of behaviors. And that's my background. And I did that since 2012 until March of this year. And in March of this year, I decided to go full time on being on do parent coaching. Why? Because remember the first child that came to my foster care, he's living with his mom, his adoptive mom, and she kept calling me for advice and then other moms. And I was like, there is something here. I'm just giving them advice for free until more moms came in. And then I said, okay, I'm just going to create my account on Instagram. And that's when everything started. And since March is that I've been doing this full time.
Wow, that's a great story. And I love what happened to the being a lawyer. It sounds like you found your passion in this.
Okay,
Were
so
you
I'm a Colombian lawyer. I can practice law and my license is active there. Here, I am not able to practice unless I pass the bar,
Gotcha.
because the bar from there, of course, doesn't
Different.
apply here. But I love this so much what I do that, to be honest, I don't want to practice law.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. I totally understand. Cool. That was really, really cool kind of learning. You said you hadn't shared that story. I love that you're on TikTok Live, that, you know, your followers got to hear it.
So for the people that don't know me, I did get pregnant. I have twins. Oh. They're 4 years old. And it took me 7 years, but they're here.
I thought you were announcing another pregnancy, because I knew about the twins. I was like, oh, wait, a third? Did we just? Okay, so Natalie asked, she's clarified. So she said, I don't want to appear to be nagging my husband, because I recognize my son is wanting to spend time with my husband, but my husband doesn't. And that is, I understand, because when we as adults are playing with children, it's not really adult play. And I mean, for some people, it may really feel like play, but it doesn't feel like it's, you're kind of going through like a parenting or like a teaching process, or, if you had the choice of playing Legos with a 5-year-old or doing your own thing, most adults would choose doing their own thing. I like talking to kids, and so like I think I may be.
I can see you on the floor playing with the Legos.
Definitely, man. I was doing it today, but she's asking for suggestions on, I guess, how to kind of talk to maybe her husband, or how to even meet that need. I have some thoughts on it, but would you like to chime in about meeting the need when it appears that the child is wanting that love language with the other partner?
Okay. So, I think for men, there should be one love language added to the list, and it is the language of respect. When men feel loved, when they feel respected. So that's the very first thing. If you come out disrespectful when you talk to him, he's going to shut down, because he won't feel connected. Because men feel loved when they feel respected. So look at the time where he's relaxed, when he's happy, when he's not stressed, that he just came from work, and then talk to him. And instead of being judgmental, being descriptive. Like, I noticed that my son does this and that, and then you do this and that, but without judgment, just describing what she sees. Mm-hmm. And then to talk about how she feels, how she thinks the child feels, and then ask him to help him, or not to help him, but to ask him what could happen, what can he do to meet those needs. That's it.
Yeah.
And offer help as well, like, I don't know. Because, for example, there are some people, and I have parents that have reached out to me and tell me, I just feel so guilty, but it is true. I don't like playing. I don't like playing with my children. And some adults are like that. But then what can you do with your child that is not playing, but that still meets the need?
Yeah. Yeah. And, another thing that you can do, maybe even as a family, think about, you can almost... So one of the things about play is, like, for it to really truly be play for, children or adults, is that you have to enjoy wanting to do it and want to keep doing it. I think that's, I want to say, Stuart Brown's definition of play. You have to, you almost lose track of time because you enjoy it, doing it so much. And you don't want to stop it, right? So think about those activities that you can do that where you feel that way, where you feel that you don't want to stop it, that you really enjoy it. And then maybe that your child also does too. And maybe that your husband too. And maybe create like a Venn diagram of what those things are, of like, all right, these are things that I just like to do, things that you just like to do, things that our child just likes to do, these are things that we all like to do, these are things we like to do together, these are things I like to do with my child, these are things that you like to do with your child. And just really, so you can visually see what those quality time things are, especially for, you know, your five-year-old, who you say that that's their love language. And then just be intentional about spending time there, right? So maybe all of you guys, so maybe Candyland isn't something that everyone enjoys doing. And so, yeah, you might play with them because we're in a pandemic, there's nothing else, but you might encourage or plan more time to do things like hiking, right? Or taking a walk, where that's something that everyone enjoys doing, right? And everyone can feel like they're playing while, and that's quality time too. Maybe it's movie night. You know, what are the things that he does like to do with his son? Did she say son or child? I forget if she said son or child, but what are those things, and spend more time there. That's what I would add to.
I want to let her know that sometimes when there are things that triggers us about other people, are things that maybe be voids from our childhood, might be triggering a soft spot, maybe some kind of, I don't know, childhood trauma or childhood void. So just to like take that in retrospective as well. And instead of looking like what he's doing to my child, what's happening here, to look for her, like to look inside of her and see why is this triggering me? What is this bringing up from the inside of me? What is it about it? Why am I noticing it so much?
Yeah. No, that is so true. And this is going to come full circle, because you even mentioned it earlier in this conversation about yours. You know, you were always the person who's taking care of others. And so now, as an adult, you want to be taken care of more now too. And I think that is just, you know, like that's just the reality. And when we see it from that way, it can help us be a lot more empathetic. And I think that person really does feel seen. And then we're able to kind of help each other, meet each other's needs, right?
It could be too that her husband is speaking his love language, but because it is not hers, she doesn't see it or value it as much. Yes. For example, if his love language is gifts, and he provides gifts and provides things, but not quality time, she still feels love depleted, and she still feels that the child is love depleted. But in his mind is, I'm loving my family so much because I'm giving them all these things. Because for him, gifts have this high standard, but for her, they're not as high.
Yeah. No, that is such a good point.
So to consider that as well.
Yeah. To see, because we do have a tendency to think that our love language is everyone else's love language, and that's sometimes how we kind of operate. And so really, yeah, taking that step back, and that does help us really see what his behavior may be communicating. I love that. Really good input. Thank you.
I saw on TikTok, there was this couple fighting, and then the husband said, like, you don't spend time with me lately. I feel like you don't love me. He was complaining. And then she said, don't you see their kids are bathed, the house is clean. This sounds like love to me. And I was like, yes, like for her, it is love. But there is a miscommunication there, because they're not seeing each other's love language.
And so for a child, and I'm kind of thinking about going back to children and their love language. And Tiffany also, and Rank Community, also mentioned about, being touched? Because that's a big one that I hear too. Physical touch, right? Some people get overstimulated by touch, right? So what if you are an adult and you sensory, and you've probably heard this one before because I hear it too, right? And you get very overstimulated by sound and touch, but you just happen to have children and you pop right with two twins, you know how touchy feely and loud they can be, right? How do you still meet both of your needs? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so
one
of my twins' love language is physical connection, physical touch. So because, of course, he's 4 years old, he doesn't have the insight. He asks for it, like bumping on my shoulder, bumping or on my leg. He pushes me and he's kind of like, he invades my personal space. And if I'm in the headspace of like putting my knee detector glasses on, then I understand. But if I'm working on doing something else, or if I'm super tired, I might just get bothered by it. So this is what I do. This is what I do. Most of the time, my TikTok is falling here. Most of the time, I take a deep breath and I access my coping strategies, so I'm able to be in that headspace to meet his needs. And some other times, very few times, my impulsivity gets in the way and I snap at him. But then I feel bad and then I go down to his level and I apologize and I tell him why it is wrong. It is okay to apologize to children. Like it doesn't take your authority away. I don't know why people feel that it is easier to apologize to an adult than to a child.
I think it's a power thing.
Okay.
I think that's my, and also too, like how many adults, current adults right now, grew up and their parents apologized to them. Like, I don't think that's something that at least a lot of us, or maybe a majority of us, really experience, or at least very often. And the apology would look different, maybe in like a love language, like, okay, here's a gift, but it wouldn't be like an outright apology. It would just be like, you know, okay, here, you can have your game back, even if an apology may have been warranted. So I think along with the, like, you know, your upbringing impacting kind of what you're doing now, I think part of that is, you know, we didn't have a lot of, you know, a lot of people didn't have, most people didn't have a lot of people or parents who really modeled. I made a mistake, like, I'm sorry, like, I'm really tired, I'm like, that's on me. Like, that's not your fault. I shouldn't have snapped at you the way that I did. Now let's repair and kind of, you know, move on and talk and have that conversation.
Yes. So just to circle it around, if you feel touched out, it is normal. Don't feel guilty about it. Like, I should always enjoy my children's touch. No, that's not true. To extend mercy to yourself when you feel that is getting on you, to use your coping strategies. And if impulsivity gets on the way and you snap at your child, then apologize.
And two, in the apology, just by apologizing, because that's the real of life, right? We are going to get overwhelmed. We are going to make mistakes. We are going to do things that we wish we hadn't done. And, you know, instead of trying to, you know, create like a picture of, you know, we're not going to make mistakes, and you know, mistakes are bad. Just saying, look, we all made mistakes. I made a mistake, and this is how you handle mistakes. And so when they make mistakes, when they get overwhelmed or they hit, or they, you know, they have had that model, they've experienced someone modeling it and doing it for them. Like, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. So it's normal for them, which that way it almost doesn't feel, you know, the fact that you have to say is like, it's okay to apologize to kids. Like, you know, it's not, you know, I think it's becoming normalized now, but it's,
It's, you know, through great people like you and a lot of other people, but yeah, I think we need a normalized saying, apologizing to kids.
Yes, we need to normalize that. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So we have another question. She asks, my daughter, 19 months, just recently started hitting and biting. Her love language, I think, is quality time. But sometimes I'm tired and I want to rest, but she won't allow it. And she'll cry or throw tantrums. How do I help her meet her needs and also mine?
Okay, so go ahead.
I always let my guests talk first.
The first thing, you need to recognize what the need is. It might not be love. It might be that she has a physical need. It might be that she has another kind of need. For example, one of children's five basic needs is the need for example, one of children's five basic needs is the need for fun. The need for fun is the need to release physical energy. And when children have packed up physical energy and they cannot release it because they're in the house, there is no much physical activity, they could get hyper and get to the point of hitting and being aggressive because they don't know how to handle that physical energy packed up in the inside of them. So you just have to see, one, what the need is to be able to address the behavior according to the need, right? So just like trying to reprimand the behavior alone is not going to help your child gain the skills that she needs or to meet her child's need. She needs to see first. But I think you have something to say. You're about to talk.
Yeah, well, I was actually gonna ask you another question that has to do with this question of, because I had touched on it earlier, but I wanna hear what you have to say is, when you're putting that need detector on, what does that look like? Like, how do we put our need detector on? What things are we looking for? How do I identify what her need is?
So the first thing, you need to stop. You need to stop and reflect. Because when you're on the go, you're not thinking. You are focused on the next thing, right? So, for example, when my son is coming against me, trying to seek that, then when I start getting a little frustrated, that's a signal for me, like there is a need. Oh, I'm getting frustrated. Why? Okay, so let me start for a second. I'm going to start typing here. I'm going to look at you and assess, right? And then I start kind of like, there is a list of needs. The first needs that you always look at as a parent is the physical needs. Is he tired? Is he hungry? All the physical needs, right? After that, then you go to the emotional needs. And you may think, does he need belonging, connection? I've been here in this computer for a while, so possible. Does he need power? His power is the ability of feeling skillful. So maybe he was doing a puzzle and he got frustrated because he couldn't finish it. And then he started throwing the puzzle pieces at me because he didn't know how to ask for help. So that's the need for power and the inability of not having that social skill of asking for help appropriately, right? Or maybe it is another need, for example, the need for fun. He hasn't been out, so he's asking through behavior that he needs outdoor time, right? I don't know, you just have to see what the need is.
Yeah, and I've been talking about it a lot on TikTok and Instagram, about, especially during this time of the year, before you fill out your boxes, but we're always getting boxes. It's just like, boxes are like the best material for kids, and they're free, and we get them all the time, and they can destroy them and be rough with them, and it's okay because we can get more of it. And especially during, we're recording this is, you know, recording this on January 4th, so, you know, trash day, recycling day is probably already come, but you know, I've seen so many posts in the past few weeks as I've been talking about it and just asking people to share their box, you know, their box activities of children of all different ages doing so much creative work. And I'm talking of all from infants to, you know, from infants putting balls in like different color balls in a box with holes in it, which is very great for their development. It's exactly what they need to be doing. To, you know, 12-year-olds who are creating like a whole kitchen set out of, you know, four or five boxes and a few other materials. You know, so if when in doubt, I'm making this phrase up right now on the spot. But when it comes to like fun and you don't know like what materials or like what toys or like what to bring them, or maybe you don't even have a lot, you don't even have a lot of space, when in doubt, box it out.
That's great. And let them stories and tag you. When in doubt, box it out. I love that.
Love it. Yes, tag me in it. Because and children, a lot of times, like their creativity, they'll figure out what to do with it, right? And sometimes you can add materials, especially as they get older. I'd suggest adding more and more materials so that they can manipulate it in different ways and, you know, create whatever they want to. But man, I had to take 5 minutes out to talk about boxes because you'll be making, and I've been getting too, you know, for parents of your need of peace and quiet, just time to yourself to read that book, to listen to that podcast or this podcast, or, you know, to cook, to, you know, to do your own thing, whatever, to do that self-care act that you need to do for the day so that you do have enough to give later so you can fill your cup up. You know, I've been getting messages every day, really, and pictures to boot, and I've been posting them on my Instagram stories of parents just saying like, man, I've given them boxes and literally it's been hours and they haven't asked me for anything. Like they're like, you know, I haven't asked for food or anything. Like they're just going and they're engaged and they're loving it. And I tell you, from a development standpoint, it's like the creativity that they're using, the problem solving, a lot of times siblings too, working together. There's a lot of really good stuff there.
Yes. And it is because it is an open-ended toy. Open-ended yes. toys are those that could be used for a number of things. And they don't have to be toys per se. A box is not a toy, but for them it is, right? So to keep open-ended things that they could use, that's really, really a good, great tip to give you a little time for you to recharge, because they're going to be immersed in that independent playtime. In my house, I keep cotton balls, I keep rubber bands, I keep balls are open-ended things, balls different sizes, different textures, different colors, capes, cloth, all the things that are for a number of things, cups, different sizes. My twins love balls, and they just can be in the backyard for hours playing with their cups and their balls and a little bit of dirt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and like that is, you know, in that cup, and to just explain open-ended versus like closing it, like think about, you know, like that little phone that little plastic phone that you get for your kids and I'm not saying that like closing the toys are like bad, you should get rid of all your plastic toys. I'm definitely not going to go that far, but I mean, you could, but I like, that's not something I'm encouraging you to do. But that phone only has one use. You can pick it up, pretend to talk on it, and that's it. That phone is a phone, and when they play with it, it's going to be a phone. That box, that cotton ball, that cup could be, that stick could be 68 different things in one day, right? And you know, it's really challenging their creativity, and so they're less likely to get bored quick with it. Now we're going to kind of wrap this up because I've had you here for about an hour now, and I want to just ask you kind of an off the fly question of, what do you think is the number one thing that you learned where you felt like, whether it's a tip or idea or a concept, what you learned and you're like, this is a game changer. Like I immediately, as I understood it, I heard this, and this is now, this changes the whole game. What was there something for you?
It's breaking up.
Oh, it always does it at the end. Can you hear me now?
Yes. What did you say?
So what was the, you know, what was the game changer for you? Like, was there a piece of, give us like a piece of information, a tip, a trick, a concept, an idea that when you heard it or you learned it, it changed every, like it just made a huge impact and you felt like you can immediately apply it when you're working with your kids, children.
Okay, so for me, the big realization, the big aha moment I had in my parenting journey from all the way from when I was a foster mom till now, it is to understand why I've been saying all these podcasts, that behaviors communicate needs. That behaviors communicate needs. Behaviors are just an avenue that children use to communicate what they cannot communicate otherwise. Many children have verbal skills, but that does not mean they understand what their needs are and they're able to verbalize them appropriately. I've cared for children that were 17 years old and they still didn't have that insight or those skills. I've seen adults that still don't have those skills.
Yes, not to say. I lead people who don't have those skills. You know, it's most
so
of us.
That's when it comes to the belief, to the big belief and realization I had, and that's what I teach. Now, when it comes to a practical thing that was a game changer for me, it is to space, if safe, to space the behavior from my response, 15 seconds. That's the enough time for you to change your brain from it is a threat, I need to react to this, to your logical thinking, and that's when you can put your need detector glasses on. You cannot do it when you are in your fight, flight, or freeze mode, which it will happen even if you have parenting education. It will happen because the brain doesn't distinguish your child's aggression to any other kind of aggression. For your brain, aggression is aggression, and it prepares you to fight back, right? Or to shut down, or to react.
Yeah.
So when you space that, if safe, if your child is about to stop his brother, then react. But if safe, to space that, to is going to give you enough time to reset your brain, so you're able to put the need detector glasses on.
Yeah, I love that. I love the space thing too, and to kind of connect it to adults. And you know, you mentioned like you work with 17-year-olds who don't have it, and you know, I lead people, and so I have conversations all the time about, you know, what their needs are, and I may not be their the person who they report directly to. But I have this conversation all the time about them feeling a certain way. They feel like they've been wrong, or they feel like something isn't fair. And when I talk, okay, so, you know, what happened when you have the conversation? And then it's like, oh, I did, because I just, you know, like, I just feel like I'm going to blow up if I do, like, I'm going to yell, and then I'm going to lose my job. And really what you're saying is like, I don't have this skill. I haven't developed the skill to, you know, to have the hard conversation, to articulate my big emotions in a way that is, you know, appropriate and productive. And that is a skill, and it's something that we all need to practice. And you know, even the giving the space. I don't know if you've ever heard of the common thing, like in the corporate world, is like, you know, make sure you don't send that email immediately, right? And that's kind of the giving yourself space so that you kind of regulate yourself so that your response, even an email, it's not a direct, it's not as quick as what would happen in, you know.
And one thing, sometimes it is longer. Let me give you an example. It was a few weeks ago, one of my twins, he threw one of my kitchen stools to the floor. We picked it up and then I taught him and then he did it again. He looked at me and smiled. And I know when they do that kind of behavior, it's not they're trying to push my buttons. They're just like, they're learning limits, right? Yeah. But that triggered me so much.
Yeah.
Guess how much it took me to come back to it? It took me 20 minutes. So for 20 minutes, that stool, that chair was on the floor and I left it there. And when I was in my headspace, I came back and then I was able to be productive. So many parents think that if they don't correct right away, the children are going to lose it. And no, if maybe with the little guys, 18 months old and under two, maybe yes. But if your child is over two, he's going to remember. And it's better for you to be collected than to try to teach right away and you're escalated.
Because you may not be teaching what you intended to teach when you do escalate too. You might accidentally be teaching things like, you know, when you get upset, it's okay to lash out at, you know, at others. But when you take the 15 seconds or 20 minutes, then you're teaching, you know, when I'm upset, like it is okay, it's normal to feel frustrated, acknowledge emotion, you know, maybe they're watching you do some breath work, right? It's okay to calm down. And they may be learning it too. Now, yeah, maybe your two-year-old's not okay immediately self-regulating, but you're setting the foundation so that when they are three, when they are four, they are starting to, they can say, I'm feeling really frustrated right now. And they've seen you do breath work all the time when you've been frustrated. And so it's a lot more normal, natural for them to start doing it too. Now there are going to be other things, you know, that other ways to work with them when you're not upset and to talk about it in a practice, you know, not just in the heat of the moment, but you know, that's a valuable lesson as well when we're modeling it. But you know, it does take us learning that lesson and sometimes us growing so that we can really help grow our children and equip them with the skills that, you know, maybe we're still working on and developing.
And when, as children grow, their behaviors are a little more elaborate and you might need to take more time. For example, my last child in foster care, he was 17. So sometimes there were some behaviors that literally took me 2 days to come up with the best strategy to help him. And I didn't only was myself trying to figure it out, but I talked to my husband, I talked to his therapist, and we were really trying to figure it out to, instead of reacting right away when I saw the behavior, to gather all the facts and all the information and to educate myself so I'm able to help him better when I do talk to him. And then my mother-in-law sees that and she'll be like, you're not going to correct that? What? I'm like, first, I need to be in a better headspace because this is triggering me. Second, right now I have no idea what I would do. Like, this is new to me. This is throwing me off, this behavior. So, as children grow, it is like you can take your time to talk to your children about something. They're going to remember.
For sure.
My 17-year-old is going to remember what happened 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that he got away with it. No.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes I feel like a lot of times you feel like, oh, like I just need to do something. Like I need to do something like right now. And sometimes that's where we fall short. As now you don't have to, you know, it's better not to, you know, react immediately, but to have a better response because they're going to, you know, they will remember that for years to come, but they'll also likely remember your snappy, quick reaction to them years down the line. And it's not to say like to be perfect. And I don't think that's, you know, that's definitely not been the message of this podcast. It's not about being perfect, you know, but it is about trying to grow and learn and develop ourselves so that we can be better at growing and learning and developing with our children, right?
Okay, yeah.
All right, Marcella, tell us where, I know you're a lot of places, High Impact Club, but just plug in your stuff. Where are you? What are you doing?
Okay, TikTok, that's my main platform. Instagram, YouTube, at High Impact Club. That's it.
Love it. Short and sweet.